Hello, it's the year 2024. It's me, Matt Stewart, and we've sold out all four of our Do Go Ons live at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. But if you want to see me, you can do that. The show's called Dry Dryer, and we're at a new venue now. It's called The Grace Darling. Me and Sarenjaya Marnett, it's so much fun. The show's getting real good, I reckon. It's been heaps of fun, so we'd love to see you there. Use the discount code Do Go On for cheaper tickets. Also, we've now got the Do Go On quiz show. It's up online on the Stupid Old channel, so please check it out. Getting some lovely feedback so far. Please give it a watch, subscribe to the channel, maybe even comment on it, and, you know, feed those algorithm gods if you can. But love to see a Dry Dryer in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane. Check out the quiz show. Anyway, let's get on with this show.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I'm here with Jess Perkins and Matt Stewart.
Hello.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Jess.
I'm Jess Perkins.
Oh, you are. You know, I never forget a face, but I often forget a name.
We've seen each other more than weekly for 5 years.
Yeah. Tip of my tongue.
What is it? What is it? I know you from somewhere. I know you from somewhere. We do a podcast together.
She's looking at me like, do I'm we? Supposed to know her. I don't.
Hello, mate.
Hey, mate.
Hey, is it 2022?
No, it's still 2020.
I wasn't sure how to long nap, and I wasn't sure how long the nap
was. Or is it 2021?
It's 2021 now.
Oh, that's right. We are, can you tell, recording these out of order. I think this is the first one of
you're
the year.
You're out of order.
No, you're out of order. This is the first one of the year. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year. Hey, how was your New Year? Did you have a good time?
Oh,
did you have
boy,
some fun?
I'll tell you what I did. Had
yeah?
a nap.
All
wasn't
right.
sure how long I went for. has it happened yet?
Just, I don't know if you know, but we're recording this out of order. So I had a great New Year. It was fantastic.
You're recording this out of order. You're all
this whole studio's out of order.
Yeah, but New Year's Eve was fantastic / disappointing as ever. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, always a bit of both.
But it's a new year, a new chance for you to explain how the shoe works, Dave. Shoe works.
Yeah, tell
and
us
after
how
you
shoes
talk us
work.
Through the shoes, talk us through the show.
Are you still drunk from New Year's?
Yeah.
That hasn't happened yet? Are you pre-drinking New Year's?
I'm pre-drinking.
Weeks out.
Pre-napping, pre-drinking. I'm doing it all.
All right. New year, new us, new explanation of the show. Thanks for tuning in. If it's your first time, what we do is we take it in turns to report on a topic often suggested by a listener. And it is Jess's turn to report on a topic this week. Matt and I, we have no idea what she's about to talk about. But to get us onto topic, you better believe we start with a question.
And my question is, who was the captain of the HMS Terror?
HMS Terror.
I don't know, but I'm scared.
Isn't that an incredible name?
Is it like William Terror or something like that, where it's not even scary?
Because that's a legit boat. It's not a pirate ship or something.
No.
It's HMAS.
Yeah, that's right.
HMS Terror.
Her Majesty's
ship.
Her Majesty's a ship.
Oh, wow. And we bow down to thee.
My lady.
Terror. Well.
All right, someone we've heard of? Captain Cook. Captain.
That's in Denver,
Captain
isn't
Cook
it?
Comes up in this
captain,
story.
Captain. Is it a captain?
It's not a captain. It's Sir.
El Capitano.
Sir.
Could it be?
John.
Franklin.
Yes.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, this is a wild story.
Well done.
Someone said, but I don't know it. But apparently, it's a wild story.
It is a bit wild.
It sounds Ooh. Like you know it.
No, I saw it in the hat, and it was in the block vote. So I read very briefly through those 100 topics just to make sure they're okay.
Mm.
And this one sounded like in the the one sentence synopsis was like, holy shit.
I'm worried you're overselling it. It is an amazing story. However, I have put this report together very hastily. So it is a good story. And I'll tell it.
All right. I know nothing about it except that Matt has really sold it well.
No, I don't know it at all. But one of the people who suggested it, I think, said it's in the world of Shackleton, sort of epic
exactly
adventure
right.
yep. with a ship. Slugs are probably involved.
The difference is that we don't know exactly what happened.
Oh, wow. Oh, that doesn't bode well. You need survivors to tell stories.
You do?
Oh, no.
So this has been suggested by a bunch of people and under a few different sort of topic headings. Most of them have sort of said Franklin's Lost Expedition.
Okay, that gives it away a bit.
Does a little bit. So it's been suggested by Florence Jones, Zoe Helena, Ryan Campbell, Ben, Baylor Robert Barnard, Keith Ross, Clara Louise, Tim Randall and Blake Wilde have all suggested this topic.
Thank you to all those people.
And this is how Kate Eschner starts the story in the Smithsonian Magazine. In 1845, Arctic veteran Sir John Franklin departed Britain in command of two ships, the HMS Terror and Erebus. Erebus, really the fucking...
Erebus.
That's the
Erebus,
shit one there, isn't it?
Named after its horn.
Erebus.
What's the other one? Terror!
To seek the fabled Northwest Passage in the Arctic. They were last seen by Europeans in Baffin Bay off the coast of Greenland. Then both ships disappeared, seemingly swallowed by the ice and never heard from again, at least not from the explorers themselves.
Ooh.
Right, they never heard themselves.
They never heard themselves.
Oh my God, were they wearing headphones or something?
Yeah, they were having a silent disco.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
What?
Can't hear you.
What?
Turn off the silent disco. I can't hear
what?
You. I mean, we're in real trouble here.
What?
There's a lot of ice. The men haven't eaten in weeks. Sorry, but I am absolutely banging one out to the Backstreet Boys right now. So,
Backstreet's back. Terror.
It's just the captain grooming it up. Silent disco.
So the Europeans had been exploring by sea for centuries at this point. Christopher Columbus was out having a look around in the late 1400s. This is the mid-1800s.
Oh, he's old news.
Yeah, snooze.
Captain Snooze, I like it.
There was a massive amount of expedition over that time, added greatly to the sum of European geographic knowledge about the Western Hemisphere, particularly North America. It was essentially like, we've done it all. So eventually they were like, yeah, we know all about America. Let's head to the Arctic. Let's check that out. So in the 18th century, a bunch of explorers made discoveries in the area around the Canadian coastlines and the interior and adjacent Arctic seas, including James Cook, who is often said to have discovered Australia, but I like Wikipedia's description better, in that he achieved the first recorded European contact made with the eastern coastline of Australia. That's a bit better. You can't really discover a place when there's lots of people already living there. In 1804...
I just discovered your wallet.
And its contents. And they're mine now. Thank you. In 1804, Sir John Barrow became the second secretary of the Admiralty, a post he held for over 40 years.
Oh, that's a guy who doesn't have... a lot of ambition.
Yeah. No, because he's his second secretary for 40 years.
For 40 years.
He's just waiting for the first secretary to die.
Yeah, and they are like,
surely.
I'm sticking this out for 50
years. He's 91. Surely it's my time to shine.
Any day now.
Come on.
He began pushing for the Royal Navy to find a northwest passage over the top of Canada and to navigate towards the North Pole. Over his four-decade career, he sent out numerous expeditions, and they covered a massive area. By 1945, the combined discoveries of all these expeditions had reduced the unknown parts of the Canadian Arctic, which might contain a northwest passage, to an area of about 70,000 square miles, or 181,000 square kilometres. So they've narrowed it down a little bit, but it's still a big space.
That sounds like a
lot. It's huge. So that's where the next expedition was going. Now, Barrow's in his 80s by now. He got the position in his 40s. No. He's in his 80s.
Waiting for that guy to die.
He's nearing the end of his career. Imagine nearing the end of your career, you're 80, which for that time surely was very old, right?
Yeah.
Like, life expectancy wasn't what it is now. So he's still working in his 80s. It'd be ideal if they could make this discovery before his retirement.
That's what he said to the boys, we're going to send you out there. I know it could be long and perilous, but what you need to think about is I want to have a party for my retirement in May. Can you wrap it up before then? Because
I promised my wife a trip to Africa in June.
And we're going in June. The tickets are booked. So
and they are
honestly
non-refundable. You know, you get a discount if you choose a non-refundable
one. Yeah, that's right. You know, I saved about 25% on those. So if you could wrap it up, that would be fantastic.
You could find a Northwest Passage, that would be ideal. I think that's how he sounded.
Yeah, he was a really blokey Aussie bloke.
Aussie bloke. So he wanted to get some of that sweet, sweet glory. So he wanted to make sure he put his best man on the job. His first choice was William Edward Parry, who 18 years earlier had attempted one of the earliest expeditions to the North Pole. He set a record for human exploration farthest north that stood for nearly five decades before being surpassed by Albert Hastings Markham in 1875. So William Edward Parry, a very successful and competent Arctic explorer.
Great.
Parry was a bit sick of Arctic exploration and politely declined.
Right.
I can understand that. I always surprise when you hear of people who get obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And it's just brutal journeys.
Sounds awful.
That you go home, you get a bit of love there for having some success, and you go, you know what? I want to go back out.
Yeah.
To the roughest conditions.
I want to go lose a different limb to frostbite.
Yeah, that's right. I want to roll the dice on another thing.
I don't even particularly like going on a hike. You know, on a nice day. I'll go for a walk if it's flat. But a hike.
I'll go for a stroll down the shops.
Sure.
Yeah.
If I can
get a six pack.
Yeah. Am I picking something up? You get a
what do you need at the shops? I'm going.
I'll go down the Bottle-O. Yeah.
So just to confirm, are there any Bottle-Os at the North Pole?
Well, I've not been, so I can't confirm nor deny, so I will say yes.
But I do love that he's gone, I need the best man on the job. What? The best man said no. Okay. All right. Who's your second best man?
Oh, Dave, that happens a lot more times. Barrow's second choice was a man named James Clark Ross, who also declined because he'd promised his new wife that he'd finished up with polar exploration. So Barrow's
you
third...
You promised. That's a funny thing that he... Not me. I'd love to go.
Oh, for sure.
But I promised the old bloody bald chain. Yeah. So I'm sorry about
Said
that,
Said to
mate.
The missus, all right, love, that was my last one. And tell you what, I do not want to be sleeping on the couch for a month.
Yeah, I don't want to do the bloody doghouse.
It's a no from me, thanks.
Oh, yeah, I don't reckon I'll be doing
bloody, I won't hear the end of it.
I get enough bloody trouble at home without going on another Arctic expedition. Yeah. I tell you that.
Honestly, the miso hates the Arctic exploration.
She's like, what limb are you come back missing this time, hey? Another one of the useful ones. You can't take out the bins anymore.
I tell you what, she's right. Last time, nearly lost my dick.
The most useful limb I've got.
And she said, that's it. That's enough.
Yeah. If anyone's frostbiting your dick, it's me.
Now get the ice tray. Get the ice cubes. Here we go. Happy anniversary. It's just an anniversary thing.
Oh, it's so cold.
Only once a year. Once a year.
You keep it fresh. So he says, no, that's the second choice. Barrow's third choice was a man named James Fitzjames.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
I mean, you see why it's the third choice for that.
He was rejected by the higher-ups because he was a bit too young. He was 27.
Oh, right. He was 7 years old.
He's too young.
He was very qualified, but a bit too young.
Bit too
Let's
young.
See who else we've got.
Yeah.
Older. Could be shit up, as long as they're a bit older.
A bit older than that. He considered a man named George Back, but thought he was too argumentative.
Oh, yeah? That would be bad on an expedition, I reckon.
Yeah, especially the leader.
To I see. Or leader.
Leader. You got to, you know, you got to be able to take some constructive feedback. Mm. Got to be able to give constructive feedback. Yeah. Got to be able to communicate in multiple different ways for different personalities, different communication types.
Uh-huh. His go-to was no fuck you every time.
How does that sound,
I was just asking him how you want your toast.
No fuck you. Come on, please argue with me.
And he just punches him. Can I get you a cup of tea?
He was argumentative and also a little bit violent.
Yeah. Honestly, he was just an asshole. He also considered Francis Crozier, but he was Irish and of humble background. So Barrow thought, nah.
Well, I don't want humility on a boat.
You don't want Irish.
What a great name. That's the best name so far.
Francis Crozier?
Yeah,
Crozier.
Great name. Francis Crozier.
I'm saying it like the Irish musician, Hosier. Crozier.
Right. That, mate, I think that adds up.
I think that works. So reluctantly, Barrow offered the expedition to his sixth choice, 59-year-old John Franklin.
I mean, nothing like being in the top six.
Yeah. He's older. He's definitely older.
Yeah.
He's got more than double bloody youngster.
So
Youngy McGee back there. So
pretty good. James Fitzjames.
James Fitzjames.
That baby. So despite being the last pick, Franklin had really fit a lot into his 59 years.
I mean, he was the last pick, but whoever's picked is going to be the last pick, right?
That's true.
If he said no, he would have been the second last pick.
But if the first person had said yes, they would have been the first and last pick.
Yeah. You're my first and last, baby.
Baby.
You're my everything.
But you can say to everyone, you're my third and last. Yeah. Please say yes.
I've
keep making these calls.
Don't make me a liar.
So Franklin had served in the British Royal Navy for over 40 years and in that time led two expeditions into the Canadian Arctic in 1819 and 1825 and was appointed Lieutenant Governor of Van Diemen's Land, now Tasmania, in 1837. There's a statue of him in Franklin Square in Hobart, and the town of Franklin and the Franklin River both get their names from him.
Oh, right.
As do several places in Canada, Greenland, and Antarctica. But
oh, wow. So he got a...
He's done quite a bit.
Got around a bit.
Yeah. So the expedition was to take two ships, HMS Erebus and HMS Terror. Franklin was given command of Erebus. I mean, he's still like... the man in charge, but you can't be on two boats at once, can you?
That's the thing, isn't it? You can't be in two boats at once.
I've tried.
Yeah.
And
really?
Dave,
eyes in the back
Dave
of my boat.
Split so many pants.
Oh, I really
trying
to honestly, it was like Jean-Claude Van Damme on top of that thing.
Yeah.
In
and then
way?
We said, Dave, pick a boat.
In what way were you like Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Well, my limbs were absolutely parallel. As I was riding the two ships.
Yeah. And you had a six-pack.
Exactly.
Flexing.
And an accent.
And an accent.
Exactly, which we explained with a complicated backstory.
And
oh, why has he got his Belgian accent? Oh, okay, great.
Oh, that's why.
He was raised in a convent, taught by French people. Okay.
All right.
Fair enough.
Oh, this all makes sense.
Couldn't do an American accent, you say?
Yeah, absolutely not.
So, yeah, Franklin's in command of the Erebus, and the Irishman, Crozier, was appointed his executive officer and was made commander of Terror, a ship that he had commanded on previous expeditions. He knew the ship.
So who's second in charge?
The Irishman, Crozier.
Oh, right. So they trusted him with that.
Yeah.
But he can't be the leader because he's a little too Irish.
He's a bit too Irish for me.
Too young to lead the whole thing.
No, he was too Irish.
Oh, too Irish.
The one who was too young was appointed second in command of Erebus.
Oh, so they're all on there. Or the ones who didn't reject the offer.
Yeah. They're still allowed to come, but they're not in charge.
Right. For being Irish or young.
So James Fitzjames, he's appointed second in command. I mean, none of this will really come up again, to be honest. I'm just letting you know.
Hey, I like to paint a picture.
Yeah.
Or I like a picture painted for me. You paint me a picture.
Paint me a picture. I can't sleep without picture. You paint. You paint for me.
What a weird reason to not be able to get to sleep. I just can't sleep until someone paints me a picture.
I mean, like, yeah, just a live piece of art.
Please.
And if you could sign and date it in the corner, that would be really good.
But it needs to be, like, very, very good, but done in, like, 20 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, because otherwise I will fall asleep. Oh, hang on.
Oh, no. Now, these ships were state-of-the-art for the time. Both were over 300 ton. They were fitted with steam engines, and they could reach 7.4 kilometres an hour on steam power or travel under wind power to reach higher speeds and or save fuel. Huh. So they've got... I wouldn't have even thought steam engines back then, but I have real no concept of time.
Yeah, when did steam get invented?
I don't know.
I didn't realise steam was around that far back.
Yeah.
What year is this?
1845.
I mean, is it sort of like an 18 mid-century type thing, I think?
And it came from, like, they used the steam engines from trains, I believe, so...
Right.
trains
and
have been around for a while.
They got those from Kettles.
That's when the kettle. That's the kettle's boiling. Done.
Oop. Hey, kettle's I didn't know done. Jess was a man of a thousand noises as well.
I am a man of a thousand noises. Thank you. The ships also had reinforced bows. Is it bow?
Bows. They shat themselves.
Yeah, you got to reinforce that thing.
Bows.
Bow. Bow sounds right.
I know,
right.
But I got so in my head and I kept reading it as bow. And I wasn't going to say this, but I wrote next to it in brackets, little bow wow, to remind myself of how to say it.
Bow, that's clever.
Oh, wow.
And then but I the laughed when I saw it.
Because you're like, little bow wow, little bow wow.
Yeah.
And then you're going to write another thing in brackets.
Little bow wow?
Little bow wow.
Reinforced bows.
I mean, you got to do it.
Wows. Constructed of heavy beams and iron plates. And they also had internal steam heating systems for the comfort of the crew in polar conditions. They had heating.
That's
steam
nice.
Heating, lovely.
Isn't that nice? They also had libraries of more than 1,000 books and 3 years' worth of tinned food.
This is probably the most prepared expedition I've come across.
Yeah.
They never
the
have
books.
This.
I don't know.
I mean, the books seem unnecessary, but... Mm. It's obviously quite luxurious.
Great.
Usually, like, you know, they're living in horrific conditions.
Yeah, I don't know what their living quarters are like, but I mean, if you've got a library, it's probably not completely shit, is it? You've probably got a bed, not
yeah,
just
no,
an
but imagine that being told, I'm afraid there's no beds on this
all
boat.
The budget went to books.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, we've got the complete works of Shakespeare over 1,000 times.
So
you could all have 50 copies each.
Weren't many books written back then.
Yeah.
Enjoy. There were 134 men in total, 68 men on the Erebus and 66 on Terra. I also want to mention that Franklin being the Lieutenant Governor of Van Diemen's Land isn't the only link to Australia that was on this expedition. Commander Henry Le Vescont was the first cousin of William John Wills, the co-leader of the
Willie
1861
Wills.
Burke and Wills expedition.
Wow. Blood relative.
Yep, as his cousin.
To John Franklin.
No, to Henry Le Vescont.
Oh, I did hear you say that.
The other name I said.
Yep.
And also, so that, I mean, the Burke and Wills was after this anyway, a few years later. But there was another connection as well. William Gibson, who was a steward on the Terra, was the elder brother of Alfred Gibson, who disappeared just a year earlier on an 1874 expedition led by Ernest Giles to cross the desert of Western Australia from east to west, and was honoured in the naming of Gibson Desert. So there's a few fun links there to Australian tragedies and
great.
Disappearances on expeditions.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. So on the morning of the 19th of May, 1845, the expedition set sail from Greenhithe in Kent. They stopped briefly in Stromness, on the Orkney Islands in northern Scotland, and from there they sailed to Greenland, a journey which took them about 30 days. On their trip to Greenland, they were accompanied by a transport ship called Barretto Junior, and once they got there to a place called Disco Bay...
Oh, man. The silent disco was absolutely pumping that night.
How good is that?
Boom, 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 boom.
So that's on the west coast of Greenland.
Do you think these guys will be staying alive?
Absolutely not. So when they get to Disco Bay, they kind of stop and their transport ship stops with them as well. 10 oxen that the transport ship had been carrying was slaughtered for fresh meat, which was then loaded onto the two ships. So rather than taking all the meat with them because they don't have fridges, they can't store it.
So just kept the meat inside the ox?
Yeah, on a different ship and then slaughtered it. And they go, okay, now we've got all the meat. Now we can start
Sounds
the proper
Sounds complicated,
journey.
But I guess that makes sense.
I guess it does. But, yeah, like keep them alive as long as possible. But then why not keep – I don't know. So then they were about to head out on the actual expedition part of their journey. And so the men wrote their final letters to family. 5 men were discharged due to sickness and sent home, reducing the final crew to 129 men.
And those guys be stoked in hindsight sort of thing?
Probably.
Shout out at the time. Oh,
oh I'm
missing
out
on this death cruise.
Death cruise. Now, it said the trip to Greenland took them 30 days, which should mean it's like mid-June when they leave, like when they leave Disco Bay. But late July of 1845, two whaling ships called Prince of Wales.
I mean, fantastic.
That's very good. And Enterprise came across Terra and Erebus in Baffin Bay, which is the northwest of where they'd stopped in Disco Bay. And the expedition were waiting for good conditions to cross to Lancaster Sound. So they were just kind of like hanging out in this middle of a bay waiting for conditions to open up for them. But it seems like they were waiting there a little while, maybe a month or so. And the expedition was never seen again.
Wait, what?
By Europeans.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So that was the last time that Europeans saw them.
So the two whaling ships saw them and were like, yep. Oh, check them out over there. Anyway.
They're like, oh, there they are. Okay, yeah, cool. And then they were never seen again.
Whoa.
Until now. Here they are tonight.
Come on down.
John Franklin.
John Franklin.
Look at him. He is looking worse for wear.
But he made it.
Gross.
Oh, my God. You are so old and you've been cold for a long time.
Old and cold.
After 2 years with no word from the expedition, public concern started to grow.
What about that bloke who's been like, I really need you to do this before I retire?
Yeah, he's the like, months come ago, on.
He's like, nah, give him a couple more days. All right, couple more weeks. Couple of months, all right.
You know, it's not that easy what they're doing. So, you know, you've got to give them a chance. The Admiralty was urged by members of Parliament as well as John Franklin's wife to send out a search party. It's been a couple of years. We haven't heard from them. We've got to go look for them. The Admiralty was like, it's cool. I'm sure they're fine. But they did put together a three-step plan to go looking for them. They sent one party on an overland search led by John Richardson and John Ray down the Mackenzie River to the Canadian Arctic coast. They also sent two search parties by sea, one entering the Canadian Arctic through Lancaster Sound, the same way the original expedition had gone, and one search party entering from the Pacific side. So it's like they're trying to go, we'll catch them in the middle. A 20,000 pound reward was offered to any party or parties of any country who shall render assistance to the crew of the Discovery ships under the command of Sir John Franklin. That's just over $2 million today.
That is a lot of money, isn't it?
Just to help them. £20,000. Crazy. So the sea search parties were not very successful, but public interest just continued to grow. Like it was in the papers, people were talking about it. There were even songs written about the event, including Lady Franklin's Lament about Lady Franklin worried about her husband not being alive. Fun, topical stuff to write songs about.
It wasn't written by her, though.
No, imagine. She ghostwrote it, obviously.
Yeah,
get a bit
of
publicity going. So the search continued, though. In 1850, 11 British and 2 American ships cruised the Canadian Arctic. Several converged off the east coast of Beechey Island, where the first relics of the expedition were found, including remnants of a winter camp from 1845 to 1846, and the graves of John Torrington, John Hartwell, and William Brain. No message from the Franklin expeditions were found at this site. So they found a bit of a camp, and they're like, okay, well, they were here.
Yeah.
And they found some graves, but they don't know anything else.
Mm.
There were several other expeditions to try to find them, but this passage from Wiki made me laugh a little bit. In 1852, Edward Belcher was given command of the government Arctic expedition in search of Franklin. This was unsuccessful. Belcher's inability to render himself popular with his subordinates was peculiarly unfortunate in an Arctic voyage, and he was not wholly suited to command vessels among ice. 4 of the 5 ships were abandoned in pack ice, for which Belcher was court-martialed but acquitted.
Oh, dear.
They sent him out with 5 ships, and he wasn't good at ships.
Or leading.
Yeah. Or just being liked by anyone ever.
But I make a mean roast.
Yeah.
And doesn't that count for something? That's how I got this job.
I applied to be the cook.
Yeah, and they said, yeah, mate, you're the captain. Yeah, I said captain of the kitchen. They said, no, captain of it all.
Captain of all the kitchens on 5 ships.
Yeah, I'll do a lot of the
scheduling, the meal planning, the grocery shopping.
I'll do the invoices, no worries about it.
He said, I'm the best captain cook you've ever seen. And they were like, oh, you're great at, yeah, okay, you're great.
Yeah, you're as good as Captain Cook.
Captain's wow. Good, yeah, you can run fantastic. The whole 5 ships. I said, no, I think you misunderstood. I can do a grilled cheese.
And they're like, sorry, mate. And they just push the boat away.
I know how to open those tins you got in there. That's all.
Yeah.
I can warm them up with the steam.
Yeah, great. I've got a tin opener. Yeah. You forgot to pack one. Yeah. And you've got 3,000 cans of more than that.
That's a lot of cans.
That's a lot of cans.
Oh, well.
So I think you need me on board. Through multiple search parties over many, many years, bits and pieces of the puzzle were able to be put together. Like, this is what was so fascinating about other reports we've done, whether it was Shackleton or we've done other, like, Arctic ones as well.
Is the Arctic balloon expedition. Yeah. That was also ill-fated.
Yeah.
But
there were diary entries.
Yeah, that's right. We knew, like, 90% of the story. The end part was, like, how do they go? But we knew where they'd been. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas this one is, like, yeah, we have one piece of evidence from people on the expedition. The rest is just like stuff they've found over the years. And as technology and science has progressed, they've been able to learn more about it.
Right.
But we know nothing. There's nothing from them.
It's possible that John Franklin never even existed.
Yeah. No one's ever actually seen him.
Whoa.
Looked him up. He's a weird looking dude.
Boy, there hasn't been a John Franklin around these parts.
Since 1845. yeah, okay, so we can put bits and pieces together. So basically what we know is that Franklin's men spent the winter of 1845 to 46 on Beachy Island, where three crew members died and were buried.
Sounds nice. Oh, Beachy Island.
Beachy Island.
Three members died. Oh.
Yeah, the death isn't great. After travelling down Peel Sound through the summer of 1846, Terror and Erebus became trapped in ice off King William Island in September of 1846 and are thought to have never sailed again. They just got stuck in ice. They didn't have slugs, obviously. To release.
You don't want to die with slugs still in the barrel, unreleased.
That's right. You may as well, I mean, you know, let them do their thing.
Yeah. Slugs travel by barrel?
Yeah, barrel of slugs, you know. You know the famous phrase?
Yeah.
Barrel of slugs.
Get out the barrel of slugs.
that's where that comes from.
Yeah, did you know that?
I didn't know
it's something you use every day and you never even knew the origin.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Get out the barrel of slugs as you pour your cornflakes into the bowl.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder where that come from.
The only written information from the expedition itself is a note found with two entries on it, around a year apart between the two entries, but one bit of paper. I think it was the first note was written by just a crew member and sort of hidden away, and then it was found by a couple of like the higher ups on the expedition, and then moved to a different spot.
Right.
But I'm not going to read the whole letter because it's that old language and it's very hard to follow. But the note was left on King William Island by Fitzjames and Crozier. The first entry said where they'd spent winter, that Sir John Franklin was commanding the expedition and that all was well. The second note said, Sir John Franklin died on the 11th of June, 1847. So this is the only, like, they're about a year apart, these
right,
two notes.
So the first one's like, this
good.
Is
We're
sick.
Okay.
We're having a great time here. I do not miss anyone.
Now they're like, the captain is dead. and a total loss of deaths.
Your captain's going to be crushing a cube. Please collect your cube.
is it about my cube?
Total loss by deaths in the expedition had been, to this date, 9 officers and 15 men. The remaining crew had abandoned the ships a few days earlier and now planned to walk over the island across the sea ice towards Back River on the Canadian mainland, beginning on 26th of April 1848.
Right, so now they're like, I mean, a few people have died, but don't worry, we're going to walk home.
So quite a... Yeah.
Don't worry, we've got a plan.
Yeah, the plan is
we're going walk home.
Yeah. And how hard can it be to walk across an ocean?
All we got to do is walk back to London. Easy.
Okay. Done.
Great. And then when we get there, you know, apply for a job. Set up a new life.
Set up a new life.
It's great.
You can be anything you want.
I can be anything you want. I haven't seen my family in a couple of years. Whatever.
You can go back to cooking like you wanted.
Exactly.
That's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to make baked beans.
Oh, the dream.
Bleak sentence next. The rest of the crew died on the march. It says the rest of the crew died on the march. But then the next thing is 30 or 40 men reached the northern coast of the mainland before dying, hundreds of miles from the nearest outpost of Western civilization.
Right, and this is in the letter?
This is like or stuff that we've been able to figure out from there.
Oh, right, right, right.
Yeah. So the overland search party had a little more success in getting more details, but in a way that information served as a detriment to them. So the overland search party had set off in 1848, and by the following year they decided to split the party.
Never
split the party.
What are you thinking?
What are you bloody doing? Wow. John Richardson returned to Liverpool by November of 1849, while John Ray continued over the next several years.
So the split the party. One, some of us are going home.
One of us
That's
isn't.
The good news. The rest of you are continuing on for several years.
Yeah.
Wow. I would have taken Liverpool.
Yeah, I think, well, I'm not 100% sure. It sounded like John Ray kind of stuck around by himself.
Right.
And so I think most, I don't think it was a huge expedition overland, but it seemed like most of them turned around.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether it's your first ever website or your business is expanding, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website and engage with your audience.
Jess, before you jumping, Dave, can you say entrepreneurs again? It sounds so good.
Entrepreneurs.
Oh my God.
God, he's good.
Jeez.
If it feels a bit overwhelming to start your own website, don't worry. You can get help with written content on your website with Squarespace AI. Generating instant, personalized results that know and show your brand identity. You explain what your site's about, you choose your tone, you enter what you need, and you get short and long form text. How cool is that?
Oh my God, can Squarespace just do my life?
It'd be good if it could do my taxes.
Hey, you can easily manage your clients and invoices. Two things that I definitely have, from vetting leads to receiving payment via invoices in one streamlined and customizable workflow.
Sorry, Matt, can you pronounce streamlined for me again?
Streamlined.
Beautiful.
Was that closer?
Yeah, in that it was the word.
Okay.
And not streamlined. You can also sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell membership or courses, or you can sell files that your customers can download, like PDFs, music, ebooks.
Right, Jess, can I just get you to say the word courses again?
Courses.
Nailed it. Head to squarespace.com/dogoon for a free trial and to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/dogoon.
Oh my God.
Something that Ray did a little differently was that he spoke to the Inuit people and got their help and information. In the spring of 1853, this is like 4 years later, he encountered, in the spring of 1853, he encountered an Inuit in possession of objects he recognized as belonging to the Franklin expedition. There was stuff like spoons and it was like cutlery and little bits of silverware and stuff that he was like, oh, that's very British looking. And he sort of had a look at it. He purchased as many of the objects as he could, and they were later confirmed to belong to Franklin, Fitzjames, Crozier and other members of the crew.
Wow.
They had like coats of arms and stuff on them, so it was easy to sort of go, oh, yeah, that's... So he basically, he had them and he like drew out sketches of what they looked like and stuff and sent it off and be like, oh, this is what I found. Interviewing others in the area revealed that the Inuits had encountered the remnants of Franklin's crew in the spring of 1850. So they'd found or seen, and I've got like his letter here, which really explains it a lot. The following April of 1854, he met another Inuit who told him that the party of 30 to 40 white men had died of starvation near the mouth of Back River. So he sent word back to the Admiralty. And this is, there's a whole, this is a big sort of chunk from his letter. He wrote, subsequently, further particles were received and a number of articles purchased, which placed the fate of a portion, if not all of, the then survivors of Sir John Franklin's long-lost party beyond doubt, a fate terrible as the imagination can conceive. In the spring, four winters passed.
Love that. That's brilliant.
A good sentence. So then it's spring 1850. A party of white men amounting to about 40 was seen travelling southwards over the ice and dragging a boat with them. From the appearance of the men, all of whom except one officer looked thin, they were then supposed...
There's one fat guy up the back. It's like, Tim, are you sure you're not hiding food? I mean...
It's okay if you are.
Just say just now. Honestly, the rest of us... We could do with a bit. Tim's like, do not search my backpack.
He's jingling the whole way. Clunker, clunker, clunker.
He's like, it's like he's got the rustling of like chocolate wrappers. It's like, yeah. Like, we just had cans. Where'd you even get that?
Yeah, I can smell a ham sandwich.
So they all looked thin. The letter sort of continues. They were then supposed to be getting short of provisions and purchased a small seal from the natives. At a later date the same season, but previous to the breaking up of the ice, the bodies of some 30 persons were discovered on the continent and five on an island near it. Some of the bodies had been buried, probably those of the first victims of famine. Some were in tents, others under the boat, which had been turned over to form a shelter, and several lay scattered about in different directions. This is all still from the letter. From the mutilated state of many of the corpses and the contents of the kettle, it is evident that our wretched countrymen had been driven to the last resource, cannibalism, as a means of prolonging existence.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
But it obviously didn't keep many of them alive for very long.
Yeah, it didn't work very well for them, did it?
That's the main thing. As long as you're resorting to cannibalism, as long as it doesn't actually pay off in the end.
I mean.
You may as well... Have a little nibble. Find out what all the fuss is about before you die.
After that, no harm, no foul, you know? Yeah.
Like the miracle in the Andes.
Yeah.
But that worked for them, didn't it?
I mean, nearly every time we've encountered cannibalism on this show, which is quite a few times now, it's usually worked out. So you could go, well...
Oh, that's true. Because some of the Donner Party...
Yeah, the Donner Party and also the Essex, the real-life Moby Dick people that had to eat each other.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, I forget a lot of this show.
Yeah, you do.
Perch last week or a couple of weeks ago. The perch that were released into...
Perch, they will eat
New Zealand Lake. Survive.
Yep.
They will eat other fish and their own fish. So that was in April that he sent that letter back. And he returned to England in October, only to find that his findings had been released to the press and were published in the London Times like days after he got home.
Well, so he's like, I'm famous.
Causing a lot of anger and distress.
Oh, okay. All right, he didn't like that.
People are really mad. He had a lot of backlash for his claims of cannibalism and he was publicly spurned by Charles Dickens on behalf of Franklin's widow, Jane.
Oh, Charles Dickens had a crack.
Yeah. Just fucking crazy. Other people who had searched for Franklin's party were awarded knighthoods, but John Ray was not.
Even though he found out a lot more information than anyone else.
So because he was too honest, they didn't want to know that truth.
Yeah, I mean, he was never forgiven for delivering that news. They shot the messenger.
Wow.
I mean, the whole thing was we want to find out what's happened. Like, ideally find them and save them if they're in strife. Or second to that, if they are dead, figure out what happened to them. And he did that. And they were like, oh, this is
the people
bullshit.
Who tried and didn't find anything, they're getting knighthoods. Yeah. You fucked up,
no,
mate.
No,
mate. We didn't want results.
No.
We wanted to go out there for a little bit. Then come back and say, I don't know.
Or
knighthood.
Yeah.
Just maybe paint a nice guess. Picture.
Yeah. Or go, look, I got their spoons back. Hey. Oh, knighthood for you.
Oh, we like a spoon.
You like the spoons?
I think he did get a small amount. Oh, I say small amount. I think I read £10,000 or something, which I guess is still $1 million or something.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But he was essentially just kind of like...
Yeah, just go and enjoy your $1 million, you loser.
You dog.
He was just kind of shushed. I want to be that kind of
dog. Yeah, exactly.
Millionaire dog.
Oh, yeah. Oh, a millionaire dog.
Millionaire
now that.
Dog.
Shun me all you like if you give me $1 million.
Yeah, that's right. Charles Dickens, you can punch me in the face in the street if I get $1 million.
Yeah. What okay. day is it, boy?
Yeah.
Punch me in the head day, Sir Charles Dickens. You, sir? Probably are. They give them, seem to give them out
they
to anyone.
They give them out all the time. So they give them out to anyone who finds a fucking spoon. Oh, large spoon collection. Knighthood for you.
So searches for information and answers continued over the next 170 years.
Whoa. That's like till now, right?
Yep. Evidence suggested that a combination of cold, starvation and disease, including scurvy, pneumonia and tuberculosis, all made worse by lead poisoning, killed everyone in the Franklin Party. Now, lead poisoning, you might ask.
Oh, are they painting with lead paint?
No, the tinned food.
Oh, no.
Was supplied by a provisioner named Stephen Goldner, who was given the contract just a few, like 7 weeks before they set sail.
So it was this, by their well-stocked fridge.
It was this really big order, and he was like, oh, this is great for my business, but he had to like really work under the pump. So he worked frantically on a large order of 8,000 tins. The haste required affected quality control of some of the tins, which were later found to have lead soldering that was thick and sloppily done and dripped like melted candle wax down the inside surface, is the quote. So their 3 years' worth of food was slowly poisoning them.
Oh, no.
But a 2013 study indicated that the lead levels in their bones had been consistent throughout their lives, and if they'd been getting poisoned, there'd be a spike.
Right.
I don't know how you tell that from bones.
Well, it's just that bones are much like trees. So they've got rings.
Oh, lead rings.
Depending on how many lead rings you've got and how thick the lead rings are.
That's fascinating.
Check the femur.
Yeah. I'm a bone scientist.
You're a bone man.
Some people call me a bone doctor.
I call you bone boy.
Bone doctor's here for business. That's what I say when I'm entering a boudoir. Yeah.
Dr. Bone.
It's funny when I give Jess regret face.
Yeah, that is impressive.
Welcome to the boneyard.
Would I enter the boudoir? This study in 2013 was like, actually, it's probably more to do with malnutrition.
actually.
But still, just the idea when I was reading that like they had food and you're like, okay, well, that's good. But then the food is...
That's
bad. Lead poisoning. Yeah. It's a real monkey paw thing.
You get a free...
free froggit.
Free froggit. Free frozen yogurt.
That's good.
But it's cursed. It's also cursed.
That's bad.
But it contains potassium benzoate.
That's bad. good bit. One of ours that we came up with.
Wow. One of the many.
God, we are quippy. In September of 2014, a Canadian team announced that it had located one of Franklin's two ships. The ship was in good condition at the time, was about 11 metres of water, under about 11 metres of water.
Oh, right. I thought they found it, like, it's in good condition. We just found it, like, you know, it's just on Gumtree.
Yeah.
Someone just selling it.
Crazy.
Hey, I reckon I have
that
ship. We
actually just Googled it.
Yeah, just type old boat for sale.
Franklin.
Franklin, keyword search. Oh, there it is. And all they wanted was 15 grand.
Easy peasy. So here I am at the bank asking for a loan, please.
So it's under 11 metres of water.
It's 36 feet, and it was the bottom of Wilmot and Crampton Bay. A month later, it was confirmed that the ship that had been found was the HMS Erebus. So they found it in 2014. They left in 1845.
I mean, that's a long round trip.
Crazy. Well, 2 years later, in September of 2016, it was announced that the Arctic Research Foundation expedition had found the wreck of HMS Terror.
No.
South of King William Island in Terror Bay. I don't know if that's, you know.
Any relation?
I think.
Imagine.
Let's say yes.
What are the chances?
I know. It was in a depth of 24 metres, so it was a bit deeper, and it was in pristine condition.
Oh, wow.
Which is baffling, because wouldn't they be... Oh, it probably wasn't made of wood. I was thinking like a pirate ship, like wood.
Yeah. No, I think it probably was made of wood, right?
I don't know.
Sometimes the water is so cold around those things that they sort of preserve better, maybe.
Yeah.
Or I'm guessing it's in...
Maybe they made it with hewn pine.
Yes, that's right.
Learned from Andy Matthews that is basically just doesn't deteriorate.
Oh, that's
ever.
Right. Yeah.
Never rots.
So maybe. But yeah, so only a few years ago... They were found.
And do they bring them up?
I'm not sure, actually.
Or nah, they never mention them.
That's a good point. I didn't actually even look at that. I was just like, wow, they were found. I'm not sure what they've done with them now. I wonder if you could transport them. But yeah, so this is probably why a lot of people suggested it, because it was pretty big news in Canada, especially.
Right. It's amazing that both of them were found.
I know, yeah. But still a lot of mystery around. So like, yeah, there have been so many since the late 1850s to now when they found the ships, and probably still looking for information, looking for what happened, you know, but forgot where I was going with that point.
But, you know, et cetera. Fill in your own conclusion here.
No, I was just saying that, like if you look at like the Wikipedia page, for example, there's just like it's every few years there's another expedition that's gone and they've looked for something and maybe they've found like a small detail.
Yeah, half a spoon.
But there's still nothing that's like really, yeah, we don't fully know what happened or
but
how they got stuck.
Finding the ships and finding them in those spots, did that give anyone any more, you know, closure or, oh, why were they in this area? Did that help?
Well, it seems like it was a bit weird because of the allegations that, well, I mean, they're true, about cannibalism and stuff like that. The story was still really widely popular and, like, that kind of got brushed over in time. So, like, Franklin's wife, Jane, was furious at that. And there was also sort of, like, the way that people are looking at it now or more recently is that a lot of it was fairly racist, like Dickens in particular, sort of saying like you can't trust the Inuit people. It was sort of like, yeah, it was this weird kind of imperialistic kind of thing where it was like, well, we'd obviously know better. And it's like, would you?
You weren't there.
You weren't there. Okay. And yeah, these people have died.
I think my guess is a little better from over here than the people who were there.
I've written a letter about what happened, so I think I know.
Yeah.
What didn't happen, okay?
When they found the ships, did they find, like, diaries and stuff? I guess in 150 years under salty water, that's paper's not going to last.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. So, no, not that I read.
You would have mentioned it, I reckon.
I probably would have mentioned it, but as I said, hastily put together.
I didn't
honestly
think this was important.
I didn't think it was important to tell you that there was a whole diary that said page by page what happened.
Yeah, actually.
Bullet point by bullet point. They're really written in plain modern English.
And one of the guys was there like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, there was home
I'm on my
video
last
camera
tin.
Footage.
That's right, they opened it up. That place is covered in security cameras. Every little bit.
I watched.
You walk in and he's like, the guy's like just spooning out the last bit. And he's got food all over his face. Like, oh, thank God.
Oh, thank God you're here because I was
this
really
is
running
really
out.
Good timing.
Yeah. I've read every book here.
I was the non-thin one.
I'm Tim.
Hello, I'm Tim. There was one sort of fun theory as well that I wanted to share. In 2017, Douglas Stenton, director for heritage in the Nunavut Territory in northeast Canada, suggested that four sets of European human remains found could possibly be women. He initially suspected that DNA testing would not offer up anything more, but to his surprise, they registered that there was no Y chromosome element to the DNA. So Stenton acknowledged that women were known to have served in the Royal Navy in the 17th, 18th and 19th centuries, but he also pointed out that it could be that DNA had simply degraded as further tests proved ambiguous. But he also stated that whilst the probability of four disguised women aboard the two ships was very, very low, he could not rule it out completely.
Oh. It was a mystery episode.
And so, yeah, that's a mystery. We don't know if there were women on board. But, yeah, it's kind of it's a wild tale. And there is a lot more to the story as well. But you could go on so many different tangents. You could talk so much about John Ray's expedition and the time he spent looking for information. You could talk more about Franklin himself. You could talk about so many different things, but I just wanted to, like, get the, I guess, like, the bones of the story. Oh, poor taste there. But, you know.
Did you examine the rings for those bones?
I checked the rings.
But it does sound like a lot of it would be speculation, right?
Because it feels a bit that way,
no one really knows.
Yeah, which is kind of fascinating because so many years after, we don't know. We still don't really know.
And it's interesting that people are still really curious to find it out. Like, yeah. It's obviously a mystery that's got a lot of people's attention.
Yeah, exactly right. And, yeah, it was huge news. I remember a couple of people in the hat were like, this story was massive.
When, yeah, and then finding the boats would have just, yeah, brought it all back up again.
Yeah,
exactly right, yeah. And so I assume people are probably still looking for information. You know, it just keeps going. It's crazy. But yeah, that is my my story on Franklin's lost expedition.
Great report. That was a fascinating story. Thanks so much for telling us, Boppa.
A pleasure.
And thanks to those people who suggested it.
Yeah, heaps of them.
But we'll be wrapping up in the studio now. I think we're going to throw over to Jess, who back at her home, probably in a home studio.
Yep.
Maybe a boudoir.
Oh,
definitely not my boudoir.
The bathtub.
Doesn't that just mean bedroom?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm just saying I won't be in my bedroom. My microphone's connected to my computer.
I'm
in
like,
the study.
Have I been saying something fucked?
No.
I mean, I kind of was, but yeah. I didn't. Yeah. Anyway.
It just means bedroom.
Does boudoir mean asshole?
Realistically, I won't be there.
Bob's probably going to be recording this from inside her asshole.
Yeah, it might sound a little funny in there.
So we'll throw over to Jess now.
Thanks, Past Matt. Yes, I am coming to you live from my study. Not in the boudoir, as Matt promised, and as I quite clearly pointed out, that is because my microphone and computer are in the study, which is a very logical place for a computer to be. Anyway, anytime I have to do one of these by myself, I end up stopping and starting a lot, which I'm refusing to do today, because I've been talking all day. Just got back from work at Triple J. I've been doing breakfast for the last few weeks, and I'm kind of sick of talking. So I'm not going to stop and start this a million times. I'm going to back myself, and I'm just going to bloody do it. So that brings us to everyone's favorite part of the show, the fact, quote, or question. And I believe it has a little jingle that goes something like this. A fact, quote, or question. Ding. And our first fact, quote, or question comes from Nathan Damon, who's given himself the title Senior Fairy Light Installation Engineer for the Dugowon Mansion. Nathan, I really could have used your services recently. I put fairy lights around an archway in my house. And to be honest, looked pretty damn cute, but I think it could have been better. But it doesn't matter now because the dog chewed through the wire. So those lights are now obsolete. Anyway, Nathan has asked a question. Nathan says, I don't think I've asked a question on here before, so I thought I'd give it a go. Clears throat. How are you? Nathan, thank you for asking. I am tired. No, I'm doing pretty well, thanks. Yeah, breakfast radio and a new puppy it's not the perfect combo, I've got to be honest. Not the perfect combo, but it's been a lot of fun. I'm enjoying both immensely. So I'm great. And as for Matt and Dave, I don't normally like to speak on their behalf, except that I love to speak on their behalf. So I will say Matt is great and Dave is fine. I will text them both after this and confirm, but I'm pretty sure Matt, great, Dave, fine. Our second fact, quote, or question comes from Joe Fleischman. Joe, thank you for giving a phonetic spelling out for us. Really appreciate that. I know that's for Matt's purpose. I probably would have said Fleischman anyway, but you know, I know that's for Matt, but it was helpful for me anyway. Joe has given himself the title of official Twin Cities director of distributing bags of rags to new fathers. Yes, dads have bags of rags. So many. My dad's just got so many rags. You know, and every time I go over, not every time, but quite often when I go over there, he won't say anything or ask. He just cleans my car and then just wipes it off with a rag. He's a weird man, my dad. Anyway, Joe has given us a quote, and the quote is, fact. Okay, well, it's not a quote then, is it? The three main characters of the show Animaniacs are the Warner Brothers and their sister Dot. Dot got her name from period dot that follows brothers when it is abbreviated to bros. Okay. That's a bit cute. It's not a quote. Not a quote at all. It's a fact, as you stated. It's a fact. But I'll allow it, and it was interesting in itself. Another fact, quote, or question here from Jessica Gillette Sheether. Jessica's given herself the title of Jessie Jess Jess, Queen of the Donut People. And I, for one, bow down to you, my queen. And Jess has asked a question. She said, I've been inspired by the Great British Bake Off recently and started upping my baking game, but I've begun Begun to run out of ideas on what to make that isn't something overly complicated. So what is everyone's favourite sweet and savoury based baked good? Oh no, and you've said looking forward to Dave's inevitable pie answer, but I am answering by myself. Again, I'll answer for them. So I've been watching a little bit of Great British Bake Off. It's so soothing for the soul. It's so fun to watch. Baking wise, I've been getting very into ginger biscuits last year. My father's mum, so my grandmother, always used to make these chewy, just delicious ginger biscuits when I was a kid. And we've never really been able to recreate them because she was just one of those cooks or bakers where she wouldn't measure anything. It was just like bit of this, bit of that, bit of this. I don't know. She probably just knew the recipe so well she didn't really need to check it. So we never really had them once she passed away when I was like 9. And over the past couple of years, I've found different recipes and some were sort of cakey. These ones that I found recently, I was making them last year. I made them for Christmas. They are so goddamn good. They're like chewy and just delicious. They're so yum, but so, so bad for you. Like you have to cream together a cup of sugar and like 3/4 of a cup of butter. And that's just 2 of the ingredients. It's just so bad for you. So I've banned myself from making them now just for my own consumption. That's why I made them for Christmas, because I was like, at least that way I will share them with people. And I still ate the bulk of them myself. And as for a more savoury, a croissant savoury, they're still kind of sweet, but I would say they're my favourite sort of pastry. I'm going through a real phase of them. On the weekends, go get a few little pastries, have a coffee. Ugh, heaven. I'm officially 30. Dave, I would definitely say pies for him, savoury or sweet. Matt's going through a bit of a donut phase, I've got to say. Yeah, we'll catch up. Well, when I say catch up, we'll meet to do the podcast. And he will have said that over the weekend he'd ordered some donuts, trying lots of different flavours. I reckon he's going through a bit of a donut phase. I hope that answers your question. If it doesn't, I mean, feel free to ask that again at a later date if that hasn't satisfied your information need. I'm very tired. Okay, last one. Oh, well, that... I've got Nathan Damon here twice, so that's a bit confusing. I will go on to Jacob Giron. And Jacob's given himself the title of head detective on the case of Matt's Auburn locks. You're on the case of it, the mystery of Matt's hair. Okay, sure. I'm glad there's a head detective in charge. That indicates that there's a team involved. So that's fun. And Jacob has given us a fact. Says, in the city of Hollywood, California, it is illegal to drive more than 2,000 sheep down Hollywood Boulevard at one time. Oh, come on. That feels like one of those outdated rules that just hasn't been updated for ages. What if I need to get 2,001 sheep down Hollywood Boulevard? Well, you know what I would do. I'd kill one of the sheep. Leave one behind. I'd leave one behind. 2,000 is very reasonable. Why are you carting sheep through Hollywood, California anyway, you know? Anyway, so I don't want to rattle on too much by myself because that's a bit weird. So I've done 4 fact quota questions there. And now it's time for everybody's other favourite part of the show, where we give some shout outs to people who support the show over at patreon.com/dogoonpod. And kicking things off today, again, I'm gonna thank like 4 people. Normally we do 3 each. I'm not going to sit here and do 9. I'm already sick of the sound of my own voice. I can only imagine you are as well. So I'm going to do 4. And we always come up with a little game. I was thinking I would give you your own ship to be the commander of. A big responsibility. And, you know, don't let us down. But I believe in you. So, first ship off the rank from Glasgow. I would love to thank Matt Conn. And Matt Conn is the captain of the HMS Convict. Nothing to do with convict ships, though, weirdly enough. Yeah. It was just Matt co-bought the boat with a guy whose last name was Victor. So they put their names together and they're HMS Convict. So there you go. Thank you, Matt. Secondly, from Fruit Heights in UT, which has to be Utah, I'd love to thank Brandon Castaneda. God damn, Brandon. Brandon has proudly just paid off the final installment on his loan to purchase the HMS. Oh, I was really hoping something would just come to me there. All right, look around the room. Look around the room. You can do this. The HMS Globe. I don't have a globe on my desk. I want to make that quite clear. I have a weird little light thing that is, like, I was going to say light globe, but we'll just go globe. Brandon, HMS Globe. And you know why? That's because you, my friend, are going to travel the entire globe in that beautiful, beautiful ship. It's got 14 bedrooms and one bathroom. So make sure you put your name down on the waiting list. Oh, okay, I'm losing it. Okay, next we have from an unknown location. The sea? I assume, because it's Dermot Carney. Dermot Carney, obviously your ship is called the HMS Apricot. But don't let the cute name fool you, because Dermot's going to fuck you up. You're going to get real close and be like, look at that cute little boat. Oh, HMS Apricot, how lovely. And then your ship is going to get taken over by Dermot's crew. And then he's adding another ship to his fleet and you're a prisoner. And he's pretty nice to prisoners unless you give him sass and then straighten the sea with you. So I'd behave if I were you. Maybe he'll give you a job on his new ship, which is your old ship. But don't be bitter about it, okay? He won it fair and square. Sorry for making you a pirate there, Dermot. And finally, I would love to thank, from Woodford, New South Wales, Ashley Foley. Ashley, I reckon you are the captain of the HMS Tim Burton. So congratulations to you, Ashley. An honour that not everybody gets to enjoy. HMS Tim Burton. Far out. This is why, if any young people are listening, you need to sleep. So, okay, finally, the last thing I need to do before I put us all out of our misery is thank a few people, welcome them in, lift up the velvet rope, and welcome them in to the Tripditch Club, where it's a special club. I always imagine it as like an airport lounge, but better. You know, like we've got fancy bathrooms and stuff with showers and you can hire out little pods that you can have a nap in for long stopovers. But we just have like nice food and drinks and fun stuff. And so I'm going to thank some people. Fuck, I've got to do it all. All right. Okay. Think of a band. The Kooks. I played the Kooks on radio today. So the Kooks are going to come in and play the music of the Kooks, but also Elton John. They're going to do some very Kooks sounding covers of Elton John classics. It's going to be a lot of fun. And food-wise, obviously we're going to have canned beans, but these ones don't have any lead poisoning in them. On toast. We're going to have some beans on toast. Simple, classic, effective. And we've got a few people that we need to thank today. I'm going to be completely honest, and I highly doubt this is the part that you're the most excited about. I think maybe just being invited into the club would be good for you, but I can't hype the way Dave hypes, you know? Like, I hype him just by believing in him, but he does a lot of the hyping. I guess No, I'm not even going to say I'll try because it will be terrible. I just saw one name and the only thing I could think of was deeply inappropriate, so I'm not going to do it. But if it's incredibly important to you that Dave makes some sort of odd pun on either where you're from or your name and you don't get that this week because it's me, I mean, get in touch and we'll make it up to you. But I'm guessing for most of you, like with Matt and I, it is not your favourite part of the Trip Ditch Club. Okay, so without further ado, I would love to welcome Ian to the Trip Ditch Club from Carlton, Victoria, Erica Steele. From Queanbeyan, New South Wales, Ebony Cummins. From Glendale, Arizona, Luke Hensley. Sorry, was reading the wrong way around. Luke Hensley from Glendale. And from Paris in France, Joseph Diana. So thank you so much to all four of you and everybody else who supports us on Patreon. We've been really, really appreciative over the past year, especially when things got really tough for a lot of people, that, you know, a bunch of you stayed on or you joined Patreon or you upped your pledge, whatever. We just really appreciate you. So thank you so much. I think that's everything. As always, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so at dogoonpod@gmail.com. Got our website, dogoonpod.com, which has links to everything you'd need. Merch, shows, the podcast, other things. So, yeah. And do go on pod on all social media. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Don't have TikTok. And I think, honestly, Matt's far too old for me to try and explain TikTok to him. I don't understand TikTok. So, look, until next week, when we'll all be in the same room and I don't have to do this alone again. God, it's awkward. It just sounds and feels shit. Until then, Dave would say goodbye. Matt would say laters. And I say bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want, it's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.